Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 12. Tonight we're going to continue our look back at the history of Disney animated films with the 1940 classic that introduced the song that would become the company theme, Pinocchio. To my left is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
To her left is Scott. Say hello, Scott.
Hello, Scott.
And straight across from me is Brian. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. Pinocchioic by Pogo. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that right. Pinocchioic, yes. You can catch more of his music and videos over on youtube.com/Pogo. More of his music over at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix. And his home web address is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at lastgenpodcast, on Facebook under the same name or under our group name for Disney Magic Hour. And you can find us on iTunes if you search for the podcast name. And if you do, head on over there. Please hit subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That'd be heavily appreciated. And actually, we got a couple of extra reviews that we received this week, and I'll read them at the end of the show, assuming that someone reminds me of that.
Okay.
Good. So, last week we started our new kind of foray into the world of the animated, well, see, I keep saying animated, but we are going to do the other films. So I guess I should just say Disney Pictures.
Yeah, the Disney movie.
Disney films.
Yeah.
We started with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, of course, because that is, you know, the one that started it all. And tonight we're going to continue along that path and discuss Pinocchio, which came out in 1940 and wasn't originally going to be the second film to come out. But let's just first go around the table and say hello to everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Is that all I was supposed to do?
I don't know. How you doing?
I'm well.
Tell everyone about the more stuff that came in today from Disney.
I got my Aladdin sumsums. So I got Genie, Abu, Raja, and Iago.
But you didn't want Aladdin.
I did not. Again, okay. I really don't like the faces on
people. You don't like the faces on the people?
Jafar looked okay, but he was sold out.
He was sold out. Scott, how you doing?
Magical.
Well played. Brian, help me.
I'm doing fantastic.
Oh, very good, very good.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Do you guys just want to go right into the? I have a lot of backstory for the movie.
Yeah, when looking,
God, there was a lot.
There was so much cool, like little tidbits and stuff about the movie and the leading up to it, the making of it, and stuff. There's a lot of good little info.
Yeah. So let's start with the basic. Something I learned: it was not going to be the second film. That was going to be Bambi.
Yeah, no, it was supposed to be Bambi and. They were having trouble getting the animation of the animals correct or the way they wanted it. So they decided to do Pinocchio.
They lateraled. Yeah. They also couldn't nail the story very much in Bambi.
Yeah, there was a problem with the story also, yeah.
So they went over to the book originally written by Carlo Collodi, which, this was something else I learned. It was initially released, Pinocchio was, as a serialized story, which, when you watch the film, makes a lot of sense because there's a lot of set pieces.
Exactly, yeah.
This film is in a lot of different areas. It kind of jumps.
Yeah.
Near the end of the film, there's a massive plot of the film seemingly not there. And they just explain it. Well, we'll go into that later. But they also had a lot of issues initially with Pinocchio.
Yeah, they had a lot of issues with the animation of Pinocchio.
The animation one part, but the character of Pinocchio even more so, because in the book he's incredibly unlikable.
Oh yeah, he's very unlikable. It's very, you know, it's dark, the serial. He's not a nice person.
Yeah.
Well, not a nice puppet, I guess, because he's not really a person.
Kills Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah, and wasn't even, you know,
wasn't even Jiminy Cricket. It was just known as the talking cricket.
Yeah.
And Pinocchio kills him by smashing him with a mallet, and then the talking cricket returns as a ghost.
Yeah.
Which there is a scene in the film where Kitty tries to smash Jiminy with a hammer.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they put that in specifically as a little bit of a nod to the original work. So they went into a lot of work onto making Pinocchio likable. And as Brian, as you were saying, the animation didn't go at first. Actually, Walt turned down the first animation tests that were handed in, and the production of the film was halted.
Yeah, he said he wasn't pleased with it and didn't think people would be able to like sympathize with the character because it was very puppety, the design they originally came up with.
A lot of the development of Pinocchio reminds me of development that we're going to eventually get into with Woody in Toy Story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was a character that went through immense changes and immense story changes because he was absolutely unlikable. You couldn't get behind him. You couldn't root for him at all. Where they balanced that very carefully in the film Toy Story, but it was way over the line before. The animation then took a big turn when Milt Kahl developed a new test with Pinocchio. Actually, he had him as a donkey in this particular sequence, but he made him more boy than puppet. That is what got Walt's approval, and that's how the film actually started going forward.
Yeah, which you can see in the final product, because in the film, really the only marionette quality of him while he's a... before he's a real boy is kind of his legs. His legs have the joints in them and his knees like a wooden puppet is, but you don't see like his hands or his elbows, and his face doesn't have like the marionette kind of drawing that you normally associate like on the chin.
That would have been weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been weird. That would have made a disconnect.
That would turn it creepy, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been a little creepy, especially if he had the hanging jaw as it were. You know, the way.
Or even every time he talked, it would kind of make like a click, you know? Like a marionette.
Well, they wouldn't be able to animate the way his mouth moves as well, because it would have to move like a puppet's mouth.
Yeah, the articulation then in the mouth emotion, I guess is one way you can put it, would not have worked very well, or would have just been more difficult for not a good reason.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have helped the character be more connectable. You know, actually, I really want to talk. One of the first things I put in here was the budget.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about how Snow White was a lot for $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. This came in at $2.6
million. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And ultimately did not make half of its budget back.
No, this it lost didn't money do
well.
Originally.
Yeah. This didn't do well. Actually, a number of the films in the 40s don't do well, because you couldn't say the number one reason is there's no overseas market. Right. Because the rest of the world, most of the world, is in World War II at this point. The U.S. is not. We still have another year until that happens. And it was just, you know, a big mess. And then anything that came out during wartime also suffered.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons, because people were not really going to the movies to look at some happy-go-lucky fairy tale.
Yes.
Even though this is really dark.
Yeah, his beginning films aren't necessarily the happy-go-lucky, quote-unquote, Disney films that we, like, normally nowadays associate with that name. So, I mean, but yeah, during war, no one's really spending the money on movies, you know. It's
all bonds.
Yeah.
War bonds.
Go out and buy a war bonds. Actually, there's a really great Disney Treasures DVD. Disney During World War II, I want to say, was the name of it. Or Disney at the Front Lines. I actually have it. It has a lot of their propaganda cartoons
on there and whatnot.
In particular, De Führer's Face, which wound up winning an Oscar, I believe, for Best Short Subject or Best Song. It may have been one or the other. I'm not 100% sure. Some more facts into the creation of this film is, this was actually something I got from the documentary that I was watching that's part of the Blu-ray. A lot of people think of the earlier Disney films and you think of the Nine Old Men. But the Nine Old Men were not Nine Old Men at this point. They were the young kids who were really just kind of starting out. And they were learning from those who had already been there. So when you look at the people who did a lot of the main animation, it's not the Nine Old Men that you know of. In particular, Norm Ferguson was the animation supervisor for Honest John. Fred Moore, who had previously animated Three Little Pigs and Goofies, he is Lampwick. Is it Lampwick?
Yes,
yeah, I love that.
It is, right? Lampwick. Mm-hmm. Okay. Bill Tytla? I always say his name wrong. I want to say it's Tytla. Actually was the animator for Chernabog, and he wound up being the animator for Stromboli. So you can see he's obviously very into body language in the telling of a character. Mm-hmm. You know, Chernabog obviously is a silent character where you have to get everything from the animation. But Stromboli is incredibly, and I know the word is stupid to say, but he is very animated in his movements.
Yeah.
Almost caricature-esque in some spots.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is an animation difference from Snow White to this. Snow White was going for very human-looking humans. This isn't, with one exception, and that's the Blue Fairy.
Yeah.
Right.
The Blue Fairy looks like Snow White.
Yeah, she does.
Looks like Snow White.
Yeah.
But Geppetto doesn't really seem that often human-like. You know what I mean?
No, but I'm saying,
like his hands,
just the way he looks,
very...
the features of him and stuff. It looks more It's got that more cartoony look than
than it's any got of a the cartoony feel to it.
Yeah, looks more like the dwarves, I'd say, right. Like features wise and stuff in Snow White, as opposed to you know. The Evil Queen, or Cinderella, or Snow White.
And actually, Art Babbitt, who animated the Evil Queen in Snow White, he's the animator for Geppetto.
Oh, okay.
So, and then Milkall drew out Pinocchio. There were some scenes, though, where other people drew Pinocchio. Frank Thomas drew him as the marionette when Geppetto is pulling the strings during Little Wooden Head, during that sequence. And Ollie Johnston actually animated him during the lying sequence where his nose grows. So even though Milt was the main animator, others stepped in and did some other stuff. And then we hinted towards one of the big contributors to the film, Ward Kimball, last week. After spending 8 months on the soup sequence in Snow White and having it taken out, he was given the lead animator position for Jiminy Cricket, which looks nothing like a cricket.
No. He said, what was his quote? He looked like a, it was an egg, a little man with an egg head and no ears. That's how he described him.
That's about right.
You wouldn't know it was a cricket unless we called him a cricket. That's the only way you knew it was a cricket.
And I believe there were 6 versions of Jiminy before they actually reached the one that you're now familiar with. But then Jiminy Cricket also... I don't know if they planned on this, because even though he's in the movie, I don't know how aware they were of how big When You Wish Upon a Star would become.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, like, as we were watching the movie, like, this isn't the cricket that you think of, like, singing that song, like, throughout the movie, like, I don't know, there was, like, a little interesting character.
He fails miserably.
Yeah, and he's
a couple of times in a row.
Kind of like a horn dog, like all a women like thing. He's always like,
yeah. I actually made a note of that. He has an unhealthy obsession with toys,
female toys.
Jiminy Cricket, like he's attracted to everything in Geppetto's workshop. It's a woman form. I don't know if he thinks they're real.
Maybe because they're like his size. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it's kind of weird, though. Yeah. There's a lot of weird little things in this flick, though. Actually, as I was watching it, I thought it was odd in some spots.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that obviously later. But Cliff Edwards was the voice of Jiminy Cricket, who now sings the Disney song "When You Wish Upon a Star." Dickie Jones, as a young boy, voiced Pinocchio. Mm-hmm. Walt was first casting adults, but realized that the adults were just trying to sound like kids, and that wasn't working. So he wound up actually bringing in younger, you know, actual kids to voice the role, and wound up picking Dickie Jones, who also was in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with Jimmy Stewart, which I found pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But not as interesting as the guy who voiced Geppetto, which was Christian Rubb, who is the model for Geppetto. He looks like Geppetto.
Uh-huh.
And that same year, in 1940, he was in a production of Swiss Family Robinson, a movie that Disney wouldn't remake for another 20 years down the line. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I did think it was interesting, again, like all the voice casting was uncredited. But when I was looking up the actors who did the voices, almost all of them had a lot of credits to their name. Like, when you look at their IMDb, there were over 100 for a lot of them. The only one who I couldn't find much after Pinocchio was the one who actually voiced the Blue Fairy. She only had 24 things on her IMDb and only two after Pinocchio.
Evelyn Venable.
Yeah.
That's strange that they were uncredited, because they were named like kind of named people that he brought in.
Well, there's
to voice the characters.
Big one.
Well, there's one big one who got completely axed, except for his hiccup.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about that, Brian?
Mel Blanc was doing the voice for Gideon, the cat, and then they decided to make him a character with no speaking lines, and so all his stuff was cut except for the hiccup he had given.
Is that hiccup even him?
It's
That's what IMDb says.
Right. Supposedly it shows up three times in the movie, and it's his hiccup.
I also noted that Mel Blanc did Figaro, the meowing, I guess, and the donkey, like, hee-hawing.
Okay.
So I just thought it was interesting. Yeah, he kind of was like, no speaking, but here's all the sound effects.
Yeah.
Here's all the characters with sound effects.
That in all the films that Disney made, Mel Blanc never voiced a full character, but stuff like this, I believe this happens again.
Yeah.
There's another instance where Mel Blanc is included in a film. We'll find out later. I'm also curious as to what's the first film that lists the voice actors.
Yeah, that'll be interesting when we
also
get to that.
Also, what's the first film with a single director? Because right now, these films are directed by committee. There's four or five directors, at least, on the film who are all basically taking care of certain aspects. It's not like today where Pete Docter directs Up. John Lasseter directed Toy Story. You get a lot of combos of two people nowadays. Yep. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that pop up a lot more, whether they be brothers or brother and sister or just husband and wife. Mm-hmm. But back then, in this early stage of animation, it feels more that Walt is in charge.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of people underneath him, and some of them aren't called directors.
Yeah, that's the feeling that I get from it. It's really he's the one in charge.
Yeah.
And they just gives these people titles of director.
Which isn't how it is now. You know, Lasseter isn't the guy going, he isn't the final word on approving sequences. That is ultimately the director's job and all that. So
unless that just came like with the development of film, like in and of itself, like movies and stuff, like how the director's role kind of became,
in animation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in film, it's, Cecil B. DeMille is Cecil B. DeMille. He directs his films and makes sure at least 100 people die during construction of sets.
Yeah.
These are things that must happen in order for the film to be made. This was also the first Disney film that implemented the use of models, as in full 3D sculpted models, or we would call them now maquettes, which are commonplace for every animated film, but they did not use that so much to aid the animators in Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
It was, though, implemented here on Pinocchio.
Yeah, I read that they had models made of all the clocks in Geppetto's workshop.
Yeah,
so the animators drew inspiration from that.
Yeah, I was actually, during that clock sequence, I tried to count, and off of the quick shot that you have of it, I paused it. I was trying to figure out which ones were moving, though. There were over 15 clocks in one single shot, and then you get seven single shots of those specific clocks going off while... Is that while he's trying to sleep?
No, isn't that...
No, I think it's a celebration.
No, it's earlier. It's earlier than that, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's... we'll
it's before he goes to bed.
As well. I'm sorry?
It's before he goes to bed.
Yeah, okay, yes. Interesting little thing that you're all kind of familiar with, but maybe you don't know where it comes from. The sound of magic from the Blue Fairy. We found out what one is called the Nova Chord, and the other one was called the Celestia.
Yeah, and there are two types of like early electronic type pianos, kind of like keyboardish, but they look almost like mini organs. They have like
the Celestia in particular looks like an organ. Yeah,
and the Nova Chord had like a huge pedal on the bottom. Also, I noticed that I guess you could then kind of like with an organ change the
pitch.
Yeah.
Okay. Isn't a piano the same way, though?
They don't have where you could change the, like, the sound it makes. Like, you have the pedal where it, like, holds the chords and stuff.
Oh, okay,
But the electronic type component of an organ is, like, the thing that you can change the... pitch is the wrong word. I'm not a musician, really. But my mom had an organ. And I remember, like, fuddling around with it. And, yeah, you could definitely, there's pedals on the bottom that you can mess with.
Okay. Something that I think, if you're a big Disney fan, there's a book that you might want to pick up. It's by Herman Schultheis, and it is called The Lost Notebook, Herman Schultheis and the Secrets of Walt Disney Movies. He basically kept a journal with many of the special effects methods used in films like Pinocchio and Fantasia, even more so. And for a long time, that book was kind of lost to the wind. And after he passed, it was discovered. You can get that book on Amazon, and it shows you in detail how they pulled off a lot of the special effects for the old animated films, many of those secrets which were lost to time for a long stretch. And this only plugs in most of the holes. I think there's still some that are unknown as to how they really did it. But if you're ever interested in finding out how a lot of this stuff was done in Pinocchio, which there is a lot. If you just look for special effect shots, there's a lot going on in this film. It's so much more complicated than Snow White was.
Yeah.
Snow White looks like a walk in the park from a technical standpoint, which it wasn't.
Yeah.
But compared to Pinocchio, it absolutely does. Pinocchio also holds a bit of an honor for being the first animated film to win two Oscars. It won Best Score and Best Song, the song you know, When You Wish Upon a Star, and it won Best Score overall for the film itself. This was all written by Lee Harleen, who also wrote the music for Musicland, Band Concert, and Grasshopper and the Ants, the old Silly Symphony cartoons. I blanked on the word cartoons. They wouldn't win that again until Mary Poppins and Little Mermaid.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. Those are the only other two that won both those awards.
Oh, wow.
So that's a big gap with a lot of films in between.
Yeah.
So I was kind of surprised at that. I thought that there would be a little more. But as of note, Ned Washington was the lyricist. So he actually wrote the lyrics for When You Wish Upon a Star. And Paul Smith worked on the score as well, and he got very well known within Disney for his work on the True Life Adventure series. So, a little bit there. Brian, you were saying something about its entry into the...
Oh, yeah. In 1994, it was added to the United States National Film Registry as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant.
Very cool. I wonder when it was added to the Library of Congress.
Ooh, I don't know.
I should have looked that up. Just because the Library of Congress came up on Film Basement earlier.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I'm surprised it didn't click in my head for it. As we said earlier, the film was well-received, but failed miserably at the box office.
It wasn't until it was reissued in 1945.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it made a profit.
So then we're post-war.
Yep.
And that made a big turnaround.
It did. Yeah.
And I looked, because now they include everything, DVD sales and all the releases.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, to this day, the film has made over $80 million.
Yep, yeah.
So, it worked out in the long run.
In the end, it worked out, yeah.
In the long run,
yeah. I'm surprised to see how many times it got reissued.
Yeah, you know,
they did that a lot with the old films, because even, like, Snow White, like, it was released almost, like, every decade, there was, like, another release of it. And Pinocchio, the same thing. It was, like, 45, but then it was, again, like, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, I guess just to kind of be like, hey, remember this for the new generation?
Well, you know what? I mean, they do that now. How many... Lion King was re-released into theaters, Beauty and the Beast, Nightmare Before Christmas gets re-released every Halloween.
Do you think that would happen without the advent of 3D becoming a thing, though?
I don't know. I think that was the impetus to get it started. But now I think,
because there seemed to be a stretch where they didn't do that. But we're gonna run into other films that initially failed,
mm-hmm.
and it was because of re-releases that it found a new audience. Alice in Wonderland being the number one of those movies.
Yeah. Well, I also think too, maybe because all those ones were the '90s. The 90s hits, so maybe they felt they needed to give it a little bit more time before they re-release them. I mean, it just happened to coincide with the 3D.
Okay, but what I'm saying is they don't release Fantasia anymore.
No, they don't
put out Pinocchio anymore.
No,
which I wonder if an audience would show up for it. But if it's very limited, I think it will.
I think it would. I think if they did like what they did with Jaws.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. Mm-hmm. We went to see Jaws. They had a Fandango event, and that place was sold out.
Yeah.
Both showings that day were sold out, and the show during the middle of the week on a Wednesday was sold out.
Yeah.
So if Jaws can do it, granted that's that's a classic as well, I think you can pull that off with some Disney classics.
Also, I was thinking with the re-releasing, in the 40s and 50s and so forth, nobody had VCRs. Like, there was no other way to get these films to the masses besides re-releasing them in the
theaters.
That's
a good point.
You know, it wasn't until, when did the VCR come out? Like, 80s?
Mid-80s, early 80s.
So, I mean, like...
And even then, it was $150 for a VHS.
Yeah.
Because I remembered, again, like I said last week, seeing Snow White in the theater, again, in the 80s, it was still a thing for Disney to release them back in the theaters to get my generation at least exposure. Until then, my mom collected every single VHS.
I remember specifically my father coming home from like Price Club or whatever or something was at that point with Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and he paid like $130.
Oh my goodness!
Just for that one film, but that was what it was. It was that kind of exclusivity. Yeah. So Pinocchio took its time to become. Not to become a classic. It was when it was released, really, because of how much praise it received. But to become loved by the masses, that took a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And since then, it now is the song that features the song for Disney. And that will always have a big thing. And I feel this was the confident film. This was the one where they knew we could do this. We already pulled it off once. Now we're just going to get better. Mm-hmm. And then they really, really go for it in the next one.
Yeah.
Maybe a little much for the time. So you guys want to go into the movie?
Yeah, let's do that.
Discuss the movie itself?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Let me just get your first... When was the last time you saw Pinocchio? Start to finish.
Oh, it's been at least 10 years, if not more.
Scott?
I would say 14, 15 years.
Brian?
Yeah, about 15 years, probably. 10, 15 years.
I don't remember when the Blu-ray came out. I watched it when I picked it up. I have not really watched it since.
2009.
Is that 2009? Okay. Sorry, my computer is talking to me. Turn that down.
Yeah, it was released on Blu-ray in 2009, so it's been about six years now,
yeah.
Okay, so yeah. That's probably 5 to 6 years then. That's when I last saw it. After watching Snow White and... seeing how much you enjoyed it after maybe going in with a little bit of a pretense of, I don't know really if this is the film I want to sit through right now. Did you have any hesitation like that with Pinocchio?
I mean, I was never a big Pinocchio fan overall. So, I mean, I kind of was just like, all right, whatever, going into it. I didn't feel like trepidatious, but I didn't feel excited either.
Yeah, I was excited to watch it. I mean, it's been a long time, but I know there's a lot of things that Disney has done that has brought characters through. Like, I don't know, Connor used to watch Mickey Mouse Clubhouse all the time, and Minnie Mouse's cat is Figaro. And I always remembered, that's from Pinocchio. So I definitely was interested to watch it,
And he would know Jiminy Cricket, right? Would he know it maybe from Wishes, or was he too young?
Maybe.
Okay.
But I didn't watch it with him today.
Oh, okay.
I watched it by myself.
Yeah, I had the same feeling that I had with Snow White. I think I'm going to have that for a while because I haven't watched these original, the original classic ones in at least, probably all of them have been at least 15 years. So I really don't remember much about them. Things, like I said, with Snow White, a lot of things surprised me that I did not remember certain scenes or certain things happening, and I did not get... I enjoyed the movie. I still enjoy it, but I didn't enjoy it as much as I did Snow White again.
All right, well, we'll get to that near the finish. I do think this film has some issues that Snow White doesn't, but it also is way more ambitious than Snow White.
It is.
Yeah.
So there's a mental balance and, that I'm like, okay.
Well, the thing is, too, with Snow White, it was, it didn't really have, it didn't follow a strict story as, it didn't have source material that it was really kind of...
Bound to.
Not even that Pinocchio was bound to it, but Pinocchio was, I feel, based off of, like you said, the serial So I think they kind of changed the way.
Well, I mean, Snow White was based off the Grimm's, but obviously they changed it quite drastically.
Yeah. Yeah, but the way it was presented, you know, it was like, that's like a fairy tale. This, like you said, was a serial, so it was like little pieces, like,
yeah.
So it didn't flow as well for me. I remember the couple of parts.
Okay, all right. Well, right from the beginning, it's an interesting take. We get our book scene, but it's not the book scene like we saw in Snow White and that we'll see in future films. It's an animated book. And instead of reading the book, we have a narrator.
Yeah.
And that's Jiminy Cricket. So he even starts reading the book.
Yeah.
And like, then turns the page.
Yeah.
So.
But there were no words in the book.
Yeah, because he just starts, like, talking.
Yeah.
And then he, like, turns it over to what would be our first scene. But I thought that was an interesting flip of what they had just done a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
With Snow White.
And I didn't notice that, like, how with Snow White it said based on the, you know, the Grimm's fairy tale. I didn't notice anything like that in this one.
It did.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Yeah. It actually, strangely enough, though, it says based on the book by Collodi.
Okay.
That's what it says in the opening credits. But much like Grimm's, that reference was pretty small also in the grand scheme of things. This is the same thing. You actually missed it.
Yeah, I did.
You were looking for it too, probably.
But I was taking notes, so I probably missed that.
If you looked down, then you missed it.
Did you guys notice the other books that were on the shelf?
No, what were they?
It was Alice in Wonderland and Peter Pan.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so...
Okay, so
they already had
those seeds planted.
Yeah.
Some of your first Easter eggs, I guess you could call them. Some of your very first Disney Easter eggs.
That wasn't accidental, I'm sure.
Good catch, man. Good catch. I'm looking at the book. You were looking at the other books. We get a really nice transition shot from the first page of the book into the town, the village, where all this takes place, and then swooping down in front of Geppetto's shop, where we actually get a Jiminy Cricket POV shot.
Which I thought was really interesting, like the hopping of the camera.
Really cool.
I was like, okay, this
wasn't
is cute.
Expecting that. I forgot that was. You know what? I'm going to stop saying I forgot that was in there. We're just going to take for granted that I forgot that was in there. Something I noticed right off the bat, though, was the background paintings and everything that work into the set dressing of this film seem darker, richer than Snow White.
Yeah, definitely.
A little more depth to them, even though Snow White had that depth. You know, they also use the multiplane camera, as there's a couple of really great multiplane camera shots in Pinocchio as well. This stood out a little more to me, especially when Jiminy is walking around Geppetto's workshop.
Yeah.
There's just something about the shadows and the wood, the grain on the wood, the fireplace, the ash in the fireplace. It just seemed definitely warmer, obviously, because that was the feeling of a woodman's workshop. But it seemed to have a little more depth to it.
I don't want to say detail, but it's more like
I'm like trying to avoid
to
that word, because I feel like then you're insulting Snow White in some way, even though that's not how I mean it.
Right.
But yeah, it did feel more detailed.
More perspective, more depth of perspective. Yeah. I don't know how to describe it.
Maybe
did.
A little more of a 3D effect to it
than
what they had started doing in Snow White. This was, 3 years later?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which actually is kind of a quick turnaround.
It is.
They really, really cranked this one out.
It makes it even more amazing that they were actually going to make a different movie. You know what I mean? It wasn't even the movie they were, you know, slotted in that next place.
Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, Snow White premiered, and the next day Walt's like, okay, guys, go out, start on Pinocchio.
Yeah.
It was go out and start on Bambi.
Yeah.
And then that didn't work, and then the initial test didn't work for Pinocchio, and then they still got it out 3 years later.
Right.
Which 2 to 3 years is an average time now to complete an animated film.
Yeah.
Depending on the complexity, especially if you're doing CG and whatnot. Just the rendering could take, you know, a year. It's crazy.
Yeah, but back then, that's amazing.
Yeah. We get our first song once Geppetto is introduced and everything. But something that I really, which is Little Wooden Head, something that really stuck out to me and then continued to stick out for the rest of the film, the music, never stops in this film. Mm-hmm. It's almost like an opera where there is music going on the entire time.
Yeah.
But what this film does is it uses music that's actually occurring in the world to then become the music that you hear characters sing to.
Yep.
You know, there isn't an orchestra visibly with Snow White.
Right.
She is simply just singing because singing.
Yes.
But Geppetto is singing to the specific sounds created by the clocks in his workshop and the instrument that he's playing mm-hmm. and the sounds that Jiminy makes as he's tapping. Well, he's not singing to that because he can't hear it. But this is where music actually is being made in the world, and that's what people are singing to. Pinocchio on stage is... He literally has a band in front of him.
Yep.
Yeah. High Diddly D. I guess that would be the one where... That would be the one yeah. where it kind of doesn't follow that rule.
Yeah, it's just people singing.
It's just people singing. And Give a Little Whistle.
Yeah.
Give a Little Whistle, same thing. But again, they're whistling.
I was just going to say, but the whistling...
Well, When You Wish Upon a Star, too, is not really...
Well, that's more of a... That's not really in the film. That's the credits.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Jiminy never looks up at the wishing star and sings that song, which, going in blind, you might think that happens. Like, that would be a safe assumption. Like, oh, this is going to be the big number, is When You Wish Upon a Star. But it's the credits. I mean, it's akin to, God help me on this, sorry about this comparison, My Heart Will Go On in Titanic.
Yeah. Right.
Like, no one sings that in the movie. It's just the song at the credits.
True, yeah.
But when you think of Titanic, you think of that song.
Yeah. Yeah.
That song.
Yeah. That would go perfect when Geppetto says he wishes he was, you know, he could be a real boy.
Well, the musical cue does happen.
Right.
It does,
The musical cue absolutely happens, but the lyrics themselves are not sung. So it's almost like the song is introduced and then reprised musically mm-hmm. when the Blue Fairy gets involved.
Right.
Yeah.
Which she gets involved very choicily throughout this film. And I can't wait till we get to the Magic Dove. Because the Magic Dove was weird. It was a little weird. We have our whole, you know, all the separate clocks. We get introduced to Cleo. We get the wishing star scene. And then the Blue Fairy shows up. Something I'd never noticed before. She's transparent.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I noted that because it was so beautifully done. Because she's transparent, but like her dress is sparkling also.
Yeah.
And there's still like that depth where her dress is covering her arm and it's not covering her arm. And there's like a distinct difference between her arm where it's covered by her dress and her arm where it's bare. But the whole way through, she's see-through. I thought mm-hmm. it was just absolutely gorgeous.
Never noticed that detail before.
Yeah.
Again, it's been a while since we watched it and all that. And then, of course, the look of her is much more human than everyone else.
It is, It's strikingly different.
Yeah, she has the correct proportions for a mm-hmm. human.
Yep.
Where you can see, like, Geppetto's feet are a little too long.
A little too big,
and his hands are a little too big.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's an old man.
He has a very long face. And if Krusty the Clown was an old man, I believe, yes. Actually, Krusty has short, small feet. Silent Bob.
Sideshow Bob.
Sideshow Bob.
You did say Silent.
That's a different podcast, guys. Sideshow Bob is doing. That's how Bart knew that he was killer.
Yes, I did see
so,
that.
So, welcome to the Simpsons Hour.
Before we go into the Blue Fairy anymore, can we go back a little bit?
Yeah.
Because
I
had other notes I forgot.
Absolutely.
I wanted to highlight how in the workshop, just in the scenes in general, I noticed it a little bit in Snow White, but they were the dwarves, so I figured they were woodworkers because the beds and the chairs, everything had, you know, carvings. But again, in Pinocchio, everything had detail from all the carvings to the candle holder had a face on it. And even on the walls, like the plaster walls had painting on them, like little flower details, almost kind of reminiscent of the flower details in Frozen, kind of like that swirly type. Filigree. But I just thought that was like, that's something that I don't feel like you get as much anymore. I don't know if it's just because more time consuming or whatever, but like everything was.
But you just referenced Frozen.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
I think that what you're saying is is what Scott was saying a couple of weeks ago. I forget you were.
The music.
The music. You were saying the music doesn't inform the film as much as it does, as much as it did back then.
Right.
I think that details in the background, this isn't like poking fun at you, it's something you don't notice unless you're watching a film the way we're now watching these.
I guess. I want to see when we get to the other, like, the other eras of films, because I feel like the amount of detail that they put into a single bed in these old films, like, got passed over. And I know there's, like, a certain point where they don't pay that much close attention to certain things.
70s and 80s gets a little sketchy.
Yeah. But yeah, just those little details, like, was really great.
I think going through this, you'll notice that more in films.
I hope so.
It's also a big thing is if you watch a movie the first time, you're just trying to get the story. Mm-hmm. You're paying attention to the characters, the actors, the whatnot, because that's what you're there for. You're there to get the story. You know, even though you haven't watched it in a long time, you know the Pinocchio tale.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to drill your eyeballs into, wait, what did that character just say in this net? So you're able to look around a little more and take in kind of like a tour, a first-time visitor going into Magic Kingdom and me and you going into Magic Kingdom.
That's very true.
We're not going to rush and go to Space Mountain right away because we know it's going to be busy. We like taking our time looking at little things. So that's kind of what you get to do now with these films. Did anyone else want to make any comments on the whole, on the opening sequence of Geppetto's workshop?
No.
Okay. All right, we'll move on then. Oh, another thing, just really, this was going towards what I was saying before with the music. The sound design in this film is out of this world. There's so much work going into every little sound, and it sticks out a lot more because, again, it's normally in tune with the music.
Yeah.
Which is time-consuming and very, very difficult. So we get the a shot of our village now. We're sending a boy to school. I know it's an animated film.
Yeah.
It's an animated film. But my brain was going, is no one going to freak out about this?
That happened a lot in this movie for me.
Yeah. But as my brain was thinking that, a walking, talking fox yeah, like turns the corner. And I'm like, okay, this is probably normal. But then they're shocked by a wooden boy. It's like, you're a fox.
Yeah.
When you're like,
clothes.
Yeah. You're like singing songs and smoking cigars and talking.
Yeah.
So how are you? You're weird.
Yeah.
You're weird because you should not exist. The Hi Diddly D song I think is great. I've always loved the character of Honest John. And it's, I call him Kitty because he calls him Kitty. Even though the cat's name is...
Oh, he had another name?
I didn't know he had another name either.
Okay.
Maybe
I think
not.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's just Kitty. So I really like these two. They're a lot of fun.
They are.
They are devious, though. Damn, this is where... This movie is dark.
Yeah.
It is. It'll get to something that I, you know...
It gets really dark later, so... Jiminy Cricket, not good at his job.
No.
Oversleeps on day one. Even says it, but... Wow. That's really bad. This is also where Kitty attempts to kill Jiminy in the same manner he dies in the book. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And the lesson here is, tell the parents, Jiminy Cricket sees a boy walk off with two strangers and is like, well, I guess that's that.
Yeah.
And exits stage left.
Yeah.
I don't know how he gets this badge at the end of the film that he initially gets.
I don't know. I guess because he didn't die.
I don't know. I don't know. Pinocchio really did all the heavy lifting.
He did everything.
He actually did most of the heavy lifting.
Well, he did tell Pinocchio about temptation.
Yeah, no. He taught him. He did. He tried to teach him. And then if the kid didn't take it, he was like, ah, foy.
Yeah.
And then walked away.
One strike, you're out.
He did it on a couple of occasions. Yeah. It was like, he does it here. And then later, when he sees him singing, he's like, he's good.
Yeah. Maybe I was wrong.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
I'm going to go home. Like, whoa, what?
I noticed
what is
that.
Going on?
I was like, self-doubt. The conscience has this.
And I actually did like that. I was like, okay, the conscience is... having doubt within themselves, which, as a human being, you may actually be good at something, but you'll work really hard at convincing yourself you're not good at something.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they were going that many levels of deep in the flick, but
I think,
did work.
I think they were. I mean, it's... Jiminy Cricket is outside. It's really supposed to be like what's going on inside of Pinocchio.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But they give it a physical form, so it's kind of like when he is like that, like, oh, well, I guess he is good at it, so I'm just going to... He's not really go away. It's just, I'm going to be quiet now. Because, all right. You know what I'm saying? That's how I take it.
Oh,
anyway.
No, no, that's probably better. I'm taking it to the personification to the nth degree.
Yeah.
Is really what I'm doing. Yeah.
Well, because every part that he has to make a choice, Jiminy Cricket tells him, you know, you shouldn't do this. You know what I mean? And he makes his own choice, which if it's just his conscience, he really can't force him to not go or not be, you know, when his nose starts growing. You know, he tells him, don't lie, tell the truth. You know, but he still lies.
No, it's good, yeah. You know? This film definitely has more going on than Snow White.
Oh, much more.
It really does. It has a lot more going on. We then, after, you know, he's like, I won't even tell his dad. He's just going to leave. That's really weird. Okay, anyways. I like your explanation, though, and I'm going to actually accept that 100% as the reasoning. We go to Stromboli's puppet show. First off, I love Stromboli.
I love Stromboli.
I love the food.
It's delicious. Food
like the food thing.
Like the food, yes,
with the bread. And,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
amazing.
It's fantastic.
So while watching this, immediately hungry.
Mm-hmm.
He's really well. I love the animation on Stromboli. And we get the, maybe the iconic. Maybe we had the iconic sequence just a little bit earlier with the wand. We'll have to think about that later.
Mm.
We get I Got No Strings. The big song number.
But this is one of those things where, to me, like we were talking about earlier, it just like cuts. Like there's nothing. All of a sudden he's on the stage with Stromboli.
Yeah.
Like
he's
there's no...
Knows all the words.
You know, yeah, exactly. There's nothing. It's just like, did they sell him? What happened here? And then that's it.
Well, you do find out later they sold him.
No,
but yeah,
I know.
No,
but
I know.
It
is a very
just
like,
hard, you know,
like, bam.
Well, no, let's not skip over that. They sold a child.
Oh, yes.
It was a wooden boy.
It was a wooden boy.
I guess.
They
you know, was
a... sold...
And it was a fox.
Well, he was a fox.
Cat.
He was a fox.
So...
So a fox and a cat sold a wooden boy to a guy named after a delicious dish.
Do you think that's why they made him a fox?
Yeah, he's slimy as a fox.
Yeah,
and the other
why.
One's dumb
yeah.
as a cat, because cats are dumb.
Yeah. Cats aren't dumb.
That's why. That's why they were making people close.
Mine falls off the table once a day. It's pretty dumb.
All right, credit where credit's due. Stromboli, hell of a songwriter.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
I have
fantastic.
To assume he wrote the song.
I would think so
because he's singing it later. Hell of a songwriter.
He is.
Hell of a director.
He's got great. He's got a lot of
he's
talent.
Really, he's not bad.
He's got anger issues, but a lot of talent.
He's got anger issues.
He's typical Italian.
But
and he had a nice collection of Italian meats.
He definitely
all
did.
Around the
that
table.
He ate off a sword.
Well, that's the only
don't
way to eat
imitate.
Was that a sword or a huge dagger?
I think it was a huge
dagger. Either.
Listen, if your name's Stromboli, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. I like. You can actually. Well, before our time, I used to eat cheese with a knife. I had a cutting knife specifically for cheese.
No, and I know
it comes
that makes
with
sense.
Your Italian birthright.
But it's like, you know, you shouldn't be eating olives off the end of a sword.
You absolutely should.
You definitely should.
You just haven't.
Yeah, that's my goal. That's my ultimate goal.
This is also now, you know, we get, I say again, Jiminy has an unhealthy obsession with puppets because he is very judgmental until, like, the French girls show up and all of a sudden he's got little spectacles. Fun, though. I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Laughed a lot. And he does the question. I actually wrote down conscience questions his own self.
I wrote down conscience has a crisis of conscience.
Mm.
Wow. Ooh, words.
Poetic.
Damn.
Deep.
Yeah.
Snap my fingers.
Poetry hour? What happened?
Someone liked the patchouli. That was good. And he does have a great line. What does an actor want with a conscience anyway? Fantastic. And then I wrote down, abandons Pinocchio. For the second time in 10 minutes?
But that's where it comes. That's where I... He's not really abandoning him. He's just...
Okay.
You know.
It's his subconscious.
It's his,
I'm not going to fight it anymore. Just let it happen.
Yeah. He just goes... I don't know where he goes. I wonder where he goes.
Well, yeah. He just goes somewhere and he shows up.
To go back in his matchbox?
The matchbox looked
that
comfy.
Was a really cool bed.
If I was a kid, I would want a matchbox bed. Like something that you could work like that with little fake matches and stuff in them. So get on that, Disney. Scene 5, back at Geppetto's. We basically just have Geppetto going, did I lose this kid already?
Yeah, like, I sent the kid off on his first day to school.
First day, I had school books for some reason.
Book of ABCs and an apple.
And he produced that apple the way a magician would produce a bunny rabbit.
He did.
He literally was like, and it's behind your ear. He should have said that and it would have been great.
He pulled it from his vest pocket.
He definitely pulled a huge apple from his overly tight vest pocket. Yes,
yes.
He did.
Yes.
So, I'm not making fun of the movie. It's, there's some really funny stuff in here. Back at Stromboli's, we are now entering the land of kidnapping, slavery, threats of murder, and physical beatings.
Yes.
All in one sequence. Yep. Where...
Sounds about right.
No, go ahead, bro.
No, this is one of the things that really kind of surprised me when we when he was doing the No Strings on Me, the whole scene of Jiminy Cricket is watching him, and when he falls, I believe he says, "Go ahead, look, make yourself look like a jackass," he says.
Yeah, yeah.
He does. No, he does.
And I was like, whoa, I can't believe that he said that.
No, they use the word jackass like four times like in this movie.
Yeah,
so
a couple of times.
A word you don't hear anymore, quite frankly.
But I just, that was it. I just wanted to. And then, yeah, Pinocchio does say that later. That's right. I forgot.
Yeah,
I
Pinocchio says it and the coachman.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because that's what they turn into. They don't turn into donkeys. But it
just,
I
don't know
what
shocked me because I didn't expect to hear that word.
Yeah, it's a little foreshadowing for you.
Yep.
And actually, you can take the character of Stromboli and see his heavy influence into Sweeney Todd. Mm. It's basically the barber.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the barber.
Yeah.
It's really not much different. Mm. He has a kid who performs, you know, selling tricks and making him money and all this kind of stuff. And when he doesn't perform up to snuff, he beats him.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, where you can see the beginnings of the, what's his name, Pirelli?
Yeah.
Yeah, Signor Pirelli in Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
God, that movie's good. So we get our, what I always call as the Muppets Pass,
mm-hmm.
where the cart passes by Geppetto. As you know, Pinocchio's in it. The reason I call it the Muppets Pass, for those of you who don't listen to the other show, in The Muppets Take Manhattan, they repeatedly use the method of Kermit is crossing the street. The other Muppets are looking for Kermit, but a taxi turns a corner at the right moment and they don't
and
see
they
each other.
Him, yeah. Yeah.
They do it repeatedly, so I always think of it as the Muppets Pass. But maybe I should call it the Geppetto Pass. I will not.
Doesn't
flow
as well. I did note that when Jiminy was trying to unlock the lock or something like that, I don't know, I wrote down Goofy yell. Because it sounded just like Goofy's,
did he kick out a Goofy yell when he shot out of the lock?
Yeah. It was like a hoo-hoo-hoo kind of thing. Like in the old Goofy cartoons, like when he's falling off a cliff.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, very cool. I totally missed that.
Yeah.
Huzzah. He's not good at it either. He doesn't accomplish his mission.
Yeah.
We get the Blue Fairy shows up again. Yeah. And Shade... Subtle Definitely. Shade. Yeah. She's like, what'd you do now?
Yeah.
Moron.
Yeah.
It's like, it's been like 7 hours since I gifted you life and you're caught in a cage. And it's been like a day.
It's been like a day, but I mean, you like did gift him life and you stuck him with a cricket.
Yeah, I know.
It wasn't even a cricket.
It wasn't even a cricket.
Yeah.
It was an egg.
You know, maybe she's not making the right decisions.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
There's questionable morals.
Morals
the
in
kid
this
actually seems fine.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah, he's just
everyone
an
else around
he has
him
no
that's
idea what's going
a monster.
On.
Yeah.
We get the classic nose growing scene.
Yes.
go ahead.
I was going to say, like, at the end of the whole thing, like, when he tells the end lie and everything dies, like, I didn't remember that.
I didn't remember that either.
Like,
he
oh.
also, though, did create life.
He did.
Yes.
He actually birthed two birds
and a nest.
Yes. So
impressive.
That was new.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure he didn't think that was going to be a thing.
No.
I wonder if the Blue Fairy was like, what just happened? Did you just...
Well, they were bluebirds.
You're like, wait a minute. If you lie, will you create a whole new universe? If you lie enough? That's a whole other film now.
Yeah, there is.
You know? It's True Detective Season 3.
Really?
It's just, hey.
We're not
let's
starting.
Just, yeah, let's yeah. just put that behind us.
That's for Friday
Let's just
night.
Put that behind us. Yeah, that
we'll
is for Friday night. Cry Friday night because I spent 8 weeks watching that. Our next scene, the first thing I notice, do you want to say
it? Is the sign?
Yes.
Is the sign at the Red Lobster Inn with a huge Red Lobster on it? They should have been eating something delicious.
Is this where Red Lobster came from?
I guess maybe.
God, I hope so.
I'm hoping that is. Now I really hope that is
I've
the story.
Never noticed that before.
I didn't either.
That's it, right to Disney.
Yeah, I've got to ask them.
Or check the archives.
Can we wiki Red Lobster? Or
I'm sure we can.
Like, where'd this come from?
Yeah.
But yeah, Red Lobster Inn with a picture of a Red Lobster.
Well, that's not really very original either, I guess.
But it's interesting.
No, it
it's
definitely is. No, don't get me wrong. It definitely is.
I'm not saying they're connected. I'm just saying.
Also, because before, like, this whole thing, I never thought that the village was anywhere near, like, a body
near
of water.
Near a chain restaurant?
No. Oh. Body of water.
Near delicious cheddar bay biscuits?
We're in Italy. There's a lot of coastal cities. There's a lot
of
them.
Yeah.
And many of them lead to islands of hell.
I'm just saying, I didn't notice before that it was near a body of water.
Well, I mean, the end takes place near a giant body of water.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Up until this point. Afterwards, everything gets to the island.
Yes, there was no seagulls or anything that would have given you indication.
Yeah, where was my seagull? Telling me about human things.
Maybe the talking fox ate it.
Wait a couple of decades, and we'll get to that eventually. Clicking on to something you brought up early in Snow White, Melissa. Coachman, notice anything specific about him? Green eyes.
Yes, also Kitty had green eyes, but the fox did not. I noticed that.
The fox had soulless eyes.
He had like brown eyes.
Brown eyes, like a doll's eyes. Oh, black eyes. Anyone get that, Jaws?
Yes,
out there?
I got it.
I know you got it. You live with me. You have to get it.
Have to?
I have to. Pretty much, yeah. I mean, at this point.
But yes. Also, he had like a British accent kind of going on?
A wee British accent. And actually, I want to say the voice actor for the coachman is the same as Stromboli. Charles Judels was the voice of both Stromboli and the coachman. So,
interesting.
You know, yeah, he's doing some double duty. And the two distinctly different voices, but both very well. We really get into child trafficking here. And Kitty is there to relieve that incredibly dark idea with some comic moments. While the other two are speaking, there's a little portion where you don't really hear what the coachman is saying as they're whispering. And while that's going on, you're basically watching a comedy sequence by Kitty. And we get the Pleasure Island name.
Yeah.
And there, you know, which it did not look like that in Downtown Disney.
Which I'm disappointed.
It may have done a little better.
Yeah.
It may have also been incredibly racially unhappy with the smokehouse, but we'll get to that later. I also love he just asked for, I need dumb kids. It's like, just get to the point, sir. Like, this is what we need. Okay. So we return to Geppetto. I wrote down Dr. Gags. Oh, that's why.
Oh, this was one of the best parts.
That was really funny when Honest John is talking and acting like a doctor to Pinocchio.
Oh, yes, yeah.
The, you know, do you close your eyes, open your eyes, what do you see? Spots, you know. I thought that was really, really fun.
The part with Kitty when he was writing, and then all of a sudden he just starts going off the paper. And he, like, makes a dot at the end. It's like, there's nothing there. It's funny.
So that was good also. But again, kidnapping.
Lots of kidnapping.
Yeah, this is like our third instance of kidnapping in this film. Twice by two people.
Yeah.
The card magic trick thing, pulled the card, because he gave him his quote-unquote ticket.
Oh, yeah, give him my ticket. It's an ace of spades. And he tries to use that later on.
No one listens to him.
Well, it's because he's a dumb kid. just the perfect one that the coachman was looking for, evidently. So now we're getting onto a boat, and we get our lamp. Well, we're in a coach first with the coachman, and he's got all the kids in there. There's a shocking lack of detail.
Yes,
on
I
the
did
open
notice
shot
that.
Where the kids are just round circles and open mouths.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But then when you pull in closer, you get a lot more detail. And we get introduced to Lampwick, who is, I wrote down, perfectly obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
And he really, that character works on so many levels of what they were trying to do. Just nails it. So we get to Pleasure Island. This is so great.
Huh.
The Rough House.
Yep.
Where there is a mountain of children fighting.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on to the children on the bottom.
They've
probably assuming, been there a while.
Yeah, they've been there for, like,
I don't know if they're still moving.
I don't know what's going on there. Then we have the smokehouse where tons of Native American statues are throwing cigars at kids. Like, it was the 40s, guys. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
The model home for destruction was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking, I'm like, I would enjoy that.
Yeah.
Like now.
Yeah, they should. Actually,
I would enjoy that. They should actually. I think they do have things like that.
Really?
Yeah, I think they have, you know, they build like these little cheap, you know, mock-ups. And you can pay to go in there and just smash it till it's gone.
Take a sledgehammer and go at it.
You can buy a fixer-upper and do the same thing.
That would be one way to do it. Or pay $40 and go to a smash house.
If that's what they're.
We got to find one. Or make one.
Okay.
I'm good with either one of them. the shadowy figures that work for the coachman.
Creepy.
Yeah, very creepy. We don't get any... They look like gorillas.
Yeah, they were some kind of animal when he first tells them to close the gates.
I thought they were like demons.
Yeah, I thought they were some kind of animal.
Oh, see, I thought they looked like gorillas in that scene, but then when we see them, you know, putting the boys into the crates and whatnot, they look like demons in that one.
Yeah. Oh, even when they were closing the doors, because like their arms were very thin and long, but the rest of their bodies was short and like squat, and so I don't know. Okay. It kind of reminded me of like the spirits from Princess and the Frog.
Oh, the friends from the other side.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Little shadowy guys. So we got some shadowy guys. Pretty creepy looking though.
Yeah. Good. And that makes sense, I think, with what happens.
Yeah. Which I'm curious of how that. Well, anyway, we'll get to that in a moment. A great depth of field switch when Jiminy Cricket is in front of the eight ball stand, the mm-hmm. shop. Mm-hmm. Jiminy basically stops, looks around, is calling out Pinocchio's name. And as he walks by, the focus shifts from him back to the pool hall entrance. I don't know why it stuck out to me. I thought it was really great. Nice little detail on Lampwick calling Pinocchio slats. Mm. Calls him slats, as in like slats of wood. Mm-hmm. That's a great little detail.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't call him Pinocchio. He doesn't call him because he's not really a friend.
True,
He probably doesn't even, ask his name. I wonder if he says it at all.
No, yeah, he does. He does say it a couple of times, like, right? But because, like, Pinocchio calls him Lampy, and then he's like Pinocchi or something like that. Oh, okay. He does shorten it a little bit.
Yeah, so he also does call him Slats. Yeah. It's very interesting. We get the reveal of the Donkey Boys.
Yeah.
Wow.
Creepy.
Yeah.
That was something.
Your name?
Yeah, what's your name? He throws one into... One says salt mines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The other one said... Oh, there was a couple of names on those crates, and I...
There were three of them, I think.
Yeah, and I totally forgot. I remember the salt mines one in particular. Yeah. But basically, they're going into slave labor.
Yeah.
How long has he been doing this?
A while.
Don't think about it.
Well, I mean, there were donkeys pulling the cart of boys to the island, so, I mean, he already had a few... Ready to go.
Do they still know they're boys at a certain... Or do they just totally become donkeys?
Yeah. I think they become donkeys, because that's why he rejects the ones.
All right, well, that's a little more humane.
Yeah.
A little more.
Then we get the horror scene of the film, where Lampwick turns into a jackass.
Mm-hmm.
His screaming and jumping around and smashing things while Pinocchio looks on horrified...
Yeah.
...is horrifying.
It really is.
This, again... Anyone who calls this a kid film, your children are damaged.
Yeah, no, that's...
this is, you know, it's got some elements, but wow.
That's a creepy...
This is a very creepy scene.
Just a very creepy scene.
And we get now, you know, Pinocchio grows the ears and the tail.
Yep.
I'm wondering what is it that makes... This is, you know, not explained. It doesn't have to be explained.
No.
But I was curious of, well, what triggers it? And what stops Pinocchio from turning into a full donkey?
I think it's the island itself.
That would make sense, because they escape the island, and then he seems to stop transforming.
Yeah. He has his tail and the ears, and that's it.
He stops doing dumb things. He stops being a jackass, you know?
That's true.
He stops smoking and drinking, because he got sick from the smoke. He stopped drinking, but Lampwick didn't. He kept going, you know, and he kept being, a jerk, kind of, to, you know, Pinocchio and Jiminy Cricket. And
who leaves again?
Yeah, who?
By the way.
It's three.
He does leave again.
He gets rejected. It's but then Pinocchio feels bad, so he's stopping the jackass. So yeah, that's why I think he stops transforming.
Okay.
And then he does leave, so that
helps. I think the best reactions, though, is when Lampwick is turning into the donkey, and Pinocchio, they, like, cut back to Pinocchio, and he's like, you know, like...
Oh, with a shocked face at first?
Yeah, you know, kind of like the jaw
But then
dropping.
It turns into horror.
Yeah, then he's like, this is...
When he's pawing at him with his hands and they turn into hooves?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Creepy.
Yeah.
That was a really good scene, though.
It was a great scene.
The hands to the hooves thing.
Yeah.
But then at the end, he kind of transforms into a cute little donkey. So it was kind of interesting to see, like, these horror elements. Because, yeah, even when, like, his hands turned into hooves, like, they were kind of grotesque and detailed. And then, like, the faraway shot of him as a full donkey, like, he's kind of cute.
So Melissa is totally okay with Stromboli and the coachman's actions. That's what I got from it.
Wow, yeah.
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 So if this was your average news cycle, the headline would be, Melissa endorses child slavery and donkeys.
Also loves Stromboli.
Loves Stromboli. Well, who doesn't?
Who doesn't love Stromboli? Who doesn't? That's, to be
That's
fair.
That, that would... It'd be a headline if you didn't love Stromboli. We then get what I would say is the oddest scene in the film. Keep in mind, a bunch of boys just turn into donkeys. Jiminy and Pinocchio are making their way back to the house. There's no one there. There's a lot of dust and a lot of cobwebs. So yeah. I kind of wonder about how much of a passage of time has gone on. But then a golden dove comes from the sky and drops a letter telling them that Geppetto is now in the belly of a whale at the bottom of the ocean. Yeah. All right. Okay.
I you know what? The only thing I can think of is maybe they wouldn't have believed it if it came out of the Blue Fairy's mouth, so she had to send it in a note form.
Well, no, she said she wasn't going to help anymore.
Well, that's...
Maybe that is helping.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. You do kind of just tell two people to go tap on the mouth of a whale.
Well, that is true, yeah.
A murderous whale, mind you. Actually, I think they kind of take it in stride.
Yeah, they... Yeah.
They're like, oh my God, he's in a whale. This, I mean, I know someone else who was in a whale once, I guess, because he doesn't react like if I was handed a letter from a magical bird and it said, Brian is in the belly of a whale, the bottom of the ocean. My first thought would be, this can't be real.
Yeah.
This isn't even an option.
But, I mean, to be fair, they just got done, they hung out with a talking wolf and they just watched some... You know, they just had an island where boys were turning to donkeys.
It's a good point.
So, at that point, maybe you believe anything.
Possibly.
Also, Pinocchio's an innocent. He, is just being exposed to life. He doesn't know. Maybe he doesn't even know what a whale is.
There's a difference between innocence and...
No, he's a child. Your child doesn't know what things are until you introduce it to them. So, I think... From Pinocchio's perspective, he doesn't know anything.
He knows English.
He knows
when
English.
When he comes to life.
Yeah.
He literally says,
but he doesn't know anything else. Talk. He doesn't know good and evil. He doesn't
know.
He
knew what, an actor was.
Oh, by the way, can talk.
He did.
He absolutely did. Yeah. He also says, I can talk. Does that mean that he kind of had a semblance of sentience as a piece of wood? Because he says, I can talk, almost as if, I couldn't before.
Yeah, I was conscious of what was going on, but I couldn't talk.
So Geppetto's workshop is officially terrifying.
It is.
It's kind of like the one in Fables.
That or he is Sebastian in Blade Runner. That's a deep cut for some people. I understand a lot of people aren't going to get that one. It means you should watch Blade Runner. It's really, really good. Okay.
Well, I had a question, though.
Yes.
Where did they get the name of the whale?
Monstro?
Yeah.
Oh, he appears in operas.
No, I know, but
according to PhilharMagic.
No,
but Geppetto's in the belly of a whale, and all of a sudden they're asking all the fish.
Did they give him coordinates?
In the letter, it said,
they just went looking for him.
No, in the letter it said he's trapped in the belly of the whale Monstro.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, Blue Fairy has a name. It's Blue Fairy.
It's Blue Fairy.
She has only one.
Well, she knows everything, so
that's
she
what I'm
knows.
Saying, yeah. Also, I believe Monstro probably is, he's well known around these parts.
I have a feeling he's pretty... big.
I like how the coachman's name is Coachman with the whale. He's got a name. It's all right, we're going to give this guy full cred.
That was the interesting thing, too, because today before I watched it, I was talking to Michelle about it, and I was like, I know the basic premise of Pinocchio. Geppetto gets stuck in a whale, but I don't know how that led up. And then I'm watching, I'm like, oh, they got a letter.
Yeah. forget when it happened.
There was no buildup.
It just
never happened.
Nope.
He goes out onto the ocean looking for Pinocchio. And gets eaten by a whale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and very Jonah. I know, I get it. No, not Jonah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Who gets
yeah, Jonah and the whale.
Okay, there you go. So, that happens.
And then becomes really crazy once he's inside the whale.
Well, that's kind of understandable, I think.
He is living inside of a whale. He's starving.
And we don't know how long he was living inside that whale for, because there's a lot of cobwebs in his house
and
stuff.
It's very true.
At what point does he eat Figaro?
You would think he's already.
No,
gone.
I know he doesn't.
You would think Figaro would have ate Chloe already.
Yeah.
Cleo, yes. Actually, let's first go the whole underwater sequence. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Really gorgeous. Ton of unhelpful fish. The visual effect of the blurring within the animation for Pinocchio being underwater is great. The animation of him being weightless, but with that, how you feel underwater, I think looks pitch perfect. I still don't know how Jiminy Cricket's alive. I'm not going to worry about that. Although he does go into an air bubble and then fight to get to the top of the air bubble with the air. and then goes pops. Back into the ocean and just doesn't. And he's like, nope, we're fine.
I thought that was one of the nicer scenes, though.
Oh, I thought it was great.
You know, because like you said, he's you know trying to struggle for air, and then the bubble pops and the water starts flowing into the bubble, and he's like, all right.
Yeah. It's like, oh, wait, what am I worrying about? I've been walking on the bottom of the ocean for an undetermined amount of time so far. We'll be fine.
And it was so weird. He, like, put the rock in his pants, and he, when he opened his pants to put the rock in, and then he closed them, he's like, ooh, chilly. I was like, you're submerged in water. Like,
but that rock could have been really cold. That fish was rude.
Yeah.
All right? Young, aggravating fish, just bugging Jiminy Cricket.
He's
and
curious.
Then, like, his overprotective dad comes over and acts all tough.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you don't know what's going on. He's looking for a whale. Then he tells him and he runs away. So this movie's crazy. But I liked it. But we'll get to that later. Okay, so, yes, we finally catch up with Geppetto. He's inside. He's trying to catch fish. But there's no more fish to be had. So he's been in there for a while. You would assume there's been a decent passage of time.
Yeah.
It feels like in this. Pinocchio now becomes a hero. He's the one who figures out how to escape Monstro as Jiminy Cricket is trapped on the outside, again, being incredibly helpful.
He's trying to get in.
He is trying
he's
to get
asking
in.
The
I love
whale
that
to
sequence.
Open.
He's just knocking on his teeth. It's really, really great. After they light the fire and all that, and Monstro starts to go nuts and tries to chase him down, something I noticed, the sound effect when Monstro is making a very tight turn, it sounds like a train. I don't know if they used, like, train recordings, but really, to me, it sounded like a train.
Yeah.
Making a very, very quick stop. Huh. And then Pinocchio, you know, sacrifices himself to save Geppetto.
Yep.
And that, you know, earns him the you can become a boy now. We go to the next sequence. Yep. There's a little vigil for Pinocchio, and we hear the Blue Fairy's voice. This reminded me of something that we'll see eventually in Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
You know, that's
well,
right.
Yeah. Why? What did it remind you of?
I was just thinking it was like Snow White. You know, he's laying on a bed. Everyone's sad. You know, they show Geppetto's crying. The cat's upset. The fish is upset. Everyone's upset.
Let me restate. Towards the idea that your actions have earned you a second chance at life.
Yeah. No.
That's how I meant that. So the Blue Fairy basically gives him renewed life as a real boy, much like the Beast was going to die. And it was finally because he earned the love of another person that, you know,
and don't they also say in Beauty and the Beast, as he's being, like, risen up, don't they also go through the witch's curse that you put on him?
No, it's just music.
It's just the music?
Just music. Yeah. Or it was someone puts in, like, a copy of Altered Beast.
Nice.
And you just hear, rise from your grave. And you come out and you punch. A little odd to see Pinocchio as a boy.
Yeah.
He was a very pretty-looking boy.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, because even in the parks, he is wooden Pinocchio.
He is, yeah.
You know, so you don't see him very much as the boy version of Pinocchio, which is, you know, something that the parks always have that thing with. The Beast, quote-unquote, should not look like the Beast anymore.
Yeah.
Unless they do a Fables thing, where it's only when he gets upset, they get into an argument, that he turns into the Beast.
Yeah, when Belle's upset at him.
Yeah, when Belle's upset with him, that's when he turns into the Beast in the Fables comic book. So it was like, oh, yeah, he looks like a boy now.
Mm-hmm.
And that it took me back for a second. I was like,
yeah,
oh, wow, wasn't that
is. That's one of those strange,
yeah,
strange things.
It's just a visual I'm not used to seeing.
Yeah.
I'm so accustomed to Pinocchio as a wooden boy that when we actually see him as a boy, it took me like a moment in my brain to be like, oh, yes, duh. That was the whole point of the film, yes, for him to become a real boy.
And, like, he does have, like, he has very realistic hands. He's a little chubby face, a little chubby body. So he's a very little, like, cherub-looking little boy.
Yeah.
And very cute.
And look like a donkey.
No more donkey.
Wonder if, like, Pinocchio gets older.
He's well,
like,
that was...
I gotta find him. The coachman.
Maybe. And that's the sequel.
Yeah. But he only fights with, like, wooden...
Pinocchio to Pleasure Island.
Yeah. But he only fights with wooden objects, like only wooden weapons.
That's right.
So it's like a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
And then, a wooden sword, but really sharp.
Really, really sharp.
And he goes and he finds Stromboli first. And then maybe he just threatens Stromboli. And he's like, You tell the coachman I'm coming.
No, he's gonna.
The hell's coming with me? No.
He locks some bully.
I don't think he threatens. I think he carries out, and he has got some awesome 80s catchphrases that he spouts out as he dispatches them.
Yeah. Well, what would be a good catchphrase for Pinocchio to throw at somebody?
Like Stromboli. Oh man. Come on.
He cuts his hamstring and he's like, no strings on you.
Oh, yes.
Perfect. Yes. All right. Perfect. Book it. That line was copyrighted right now by me.
Oh, I did make other notes.
What other notes?
Well, like when we were in the belly of the whale and Geppetto and Pinocchio were reunited and
I love that scene.
Or wait, was it before that? I don't know. I just wrote down, misguided father always thinks his boy is like so good. Like, my son would never be terrible.
No, yeah. Geppetto never stops, and he's like, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on because you're right about now.
Well, Geppetto's seen him for, like, maybe 2 hours of his whole existence, you know?
He says he was born and sent him to school, like, 2 hours later.
Because
like.
I got to think that was almost, you know, morning by the time that he woke up, so.
You know, he's a very loving father. He's very loving. He probably has to learn that his son's a bit of a yutz. You know, he's prone to getting captured by everyone he meets.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe he should leave that town.
Yeah.
I think so.
That village does not seem safe.
No, that's like, it's like the Gotham of Pinocchio. Yeah.
There's just, there's a blue fairy, great.
That's wonderful.
But there's like supervillains around every corner.
Yeah. Well, it's
Gotham.
It's Gotham.
Maybe that's Pinocchio becomes Batman. Maybe. Oh my god.
Who does the fox become?
Wait a minute. Oh my god, does Stromboli come back and kill Geppetto?
Maybe.
In an alleyway? They see a movie? They see Pinocchio?
After they see Pinocchio.
Oh my god.
Full circle.
So many layers. Okay. We then have the badge sequence. Let's get back to the movie.
Sorry.
Wow, this went off the rails,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, this went very film based.
Oh, I hope you guys liked it. We get the badge sequence, which really, okay, I guess.
She probably said the same thing, like, yeah.
She's like, I did promise it, and he did become a real boy, so contractually, I am obliged to give you this badge.
18 karat gold, though.
Yeah, I liked how they put 18 karats, like, wow.
That's a thing. That was a thing in oldie films. They would always have stuff like that. And then we close with When You Wish Upon a Star. As much as we were jiving and kind of having fun, because this movie is strange.
It's very strange.
It's an odd film. It is not, it's not straightforward in character.
It doesn't tell a clean story.
Character actions, it definitely jumps a bit, a lot. It leaves out some what you would think important stuff, like how does Geppetto wind up in the stomach? I know ultimately it doesn't matter.
Yeah, ultimately it doesn't matter.
But it's such a weird, like, oh, by the way.
What made him decide to think that the way to find Pinocchio was to go out into the ocean?
The only thing I can think of is maybe he knows of Pleasure Island.
Oh, maybe. So maybe
he
was trying
was
to go
going
to, Pleasure
to Pleasure Island.
Okay.
And then got...
All right. Maybe the coachman is Geppetto's long-lost brother who went down the wrong path.
Oh, maybe. Mm.
And that's how he knows.
The coachman
so
was
he
English.
Can't... He went to England when he was young. Or it's a fake accent because he doesn't want anyone to pick up on who he is.
It's all possibilities.
So Geppetto can't bring himself to kill his own brother, but he has to find out a way to stop him. So he is creating a sentient army of wooden boys to now battle
the
coachman and his army of jackasses.
Oh, wow.
All right? Yeah. Okay? All right. Is anyone writing this down?
It's all up here.
Okay, all right, good. It's also being recorded.
So.
Oh,
that is true.
Well, that's not good. Other people can use this then.
That's true.
If I find any fanzines with this idea, and if I'll find you. All right, so let's ask our three big questions. This is a very different answer than Snow White.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
What is the heart of the film? Is it a moral lesson, or is it simply a feeling is it simply going for a specific emotion out of the watcher? For Snow White, we said it was emotion.
Yeah.
It was going for emotion. I don't think there's much of an argument here. This is a moral.
No, yeah. It's definitely a moral.
Don't talk to strangers. Follow your parents. Follow your parents' instructions. Be a well-behaved kid.
Don't
be
lie.
A good citizen.
Don't lie. Be a good citizen of Gotham.
Yeah.
This is a very moral film.
Yes.
Emotion, of course, is always going to be in the factor of it.
Sure, sure.
That's the weird thing about
You know, it does have the emotion of a father's love for the child that he's only met for 2 hours. That sort of stuff. Like, it does have, you know, it does have those emotional pulls in it, but...
You know what? We didn't talk about it, and I want to talk about it. I love the animation on Figaro when Pinocchio won't shut up when he's trying to go to sleep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I also love that he suddenly had a nightcap where just a couple of moments ago while going to sleep, he did not have a nightcap.
Well, Geppetto must have made one for Pinocchio, so he probably was like, all right.
He's like, while I'm at it,
I wonder if
this
fish
way.
Had one.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. He had a boy. He had a boy hat, right?
Yeah.
Maybe. Just maybe. Because this isn't the first time this has happened, but he acts surprised every time.
No, he made
and he keeps losing. Wait a minute, he keeps losing them to the coachman.
Yeah,
but again, it's his brother.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Now, Mel
Stromboli's his uncle. Look, I'm just saying, Stromboli's his uncle.
Geppetto, I know you're a big cat person. He's a little rough with that cat.
Phenomenally rough.
First off, he beats him up with he beats the cat up with the Pinocchio.
He kicks him in the butt. That's all he does.
And he scares him.
No, and then he scares him when he's on the stairs. And then he grabs it by the nape of the neck and just, you know, you're not supposed to grab them by their skin and hold them up in midair.
But no,
that's
but
not
the
what
nape of the neck is
do.
Okay because it's extra because that's where the mommy cat holds
the
babies.
Well, sure, I have lots of extra skin on me too. If you pull that, it hurts.
No, that's...
You're not a cat.
But specifically are there because my grandmother used to do that to our cats all the time and I used to get very upset. But, you know, my aunt, who takes care of a lot of cats, said that the nape of the neck right there is okay because that's where the mommy cat holds
where,
the babies.
Oh, because...
So it's like,
it is... Is that where the baby cats have said that that doesn't hurt me?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
No, that's actually accurate.
No, I know.
But, yes, Figaro was adorable, and I wanted to cuddle and hold him. And he also looked like a little dwarf cat because his little feet were so tiny.
Yes.
He looked like Grumpy Cat. He's a dwarf cat.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I don't know. I thought that scene you were talking about with Figaro and when he won't shut up to go to bed, I thought that was perfect, you know, being a parent, like,
yeah.
Why? Because you have to.
Because. He just ends it with, because. And if you hear Pinocchio says, okay.
Yeah.
He's just like.
Which I've literally had that conversation before.
What is the iconic shot of the film? Let's go around the table in reverse. Wait a minute. No, in reverse, I had you go first, right, Brian?
I think so.
Because Melissa was scared of the pressure.
Well, let's see how it
Melissa,
works this time.
Are you scared of the pressure this time of going first?
No.
Okay. What to you is the iconic shot in this film?
I think I have to go with when the Blue Fairy is touching Pinocchio, like, on the head or whatever with her wand and creating, you know,
magic.
The magic. Yeah. The
magic. All right. Scott, do you have a different shot that you would say is the iconic version, iconic shot of the film?
I actually think it's a little bit before that, when she first comes there and she sees him kind of like slunked in the corner.
The wide shot, a little wider with the two of them in the shot.
Right.
Okay. All right. I can go with that. Brian?
Mine actually takes place a little before that. It's when Geppetto sees the star and he's kneeling on the bed. Looking out the window.
So from behind Geppetto, looking out onto the wishing star.
Yep.
Wow. That's interesting. I would have never guessed that there were three different answers to this.
What's yours?
Oh, I'm not going to tell anybody. Mine, it would be the wand bringing Pinocchio
to
life.
Yeah.
That would be. Part of me wanted to say that I got no strings.
There's a lot. There's a lot
there's
of
a lot.
Scenes. There's
think,
the, when his nose is, when his nose is,
when his
know.
Nose grows. But for me, yeah, the iconic shot for me of this film is the magic coming out of the wand and Pinocchio beginning to transform into not a live boy, but a live puppet at that particular moment. So final question, and I think this is an interesting one. Does the film hold up? Melissa?
I don't know. I mean, it's still good and it's still interesting. I don't know if I would, like, pick it. Like, if it was just, like, a Saturday, be like, oh, let's watch Pinocchio. Like, it's not one of the things that I would say, yeah, like, let's do that. I don't know if it holds up for me in terms of, like, enjoyability. It's kind of disjointed. And I don't know. I just, on it.
Okay. Scott, same question.
I don't think so.
Really?
Only because of all the things that we were saying were so weird about the film that a lot of people will be turned off about that.
Oh, God, I gotta say, it puts check marks in my book. I gotta say.
No, I know.
I do have an issue with the film, but I'll get to that in a moment. Okay, so not really for you either.
No, I'm not really. I mean, it's a classic, but I don't think I would suggest it as something somebody should watch that doesn't really know Disney films.
Huh. That's Brian, same question. Why do I feel like we're going to get three in a row here?
No, I think it does hold up only because of how, you know, the characters in it are so iconic and, you know, they're such a part of Disney now. But this is one of those movies, Snow White, I could sit down and I would just watch that whole movie. This is one of those movies where I could see myself watching parts of the movie.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to sit and watch this movie all the way through. I could just watch the No Strings on Me scene, or I could watch just certain parts of the movie. I have certain movies like that where I'll just pop in and watch a few scenes, and then that's it.
Okay.
But I think in terms of what it's meant, and I know that, like Melissa said, the story is disjointed, and it really leaves a lot of... Sometimes there's just...
Some gaps in that wall.
It just jumps. But the, you know, the moral of the story, of I still think holds up today.
Okay. For me personally, I absolutely think it holds up. I think that there's a pacing issue towards the middle of the film. This film was the same length as Snow White, but I felt Snow White was much more brisk in its pacing. It had more to it. Even though I sometimes can take the whistle while you work sequence in Snow White a little lengthy. I don't know why that always feels a little lengthy to me. But this film, the artistry put into it makes it timeless. The music is maybe the best soundtrack ever made by Disney.
Yeah.
There's an argument to be said into that, and I would be one of the people. I'd have to really think about it, but I would argue that I think overall this is the best soundtrack ever created by Disney, with the best song ever created by Disney, and some of the most iconic characters that you'll still see people flocking to in the parks. Yeah. So for all those reasons, I absolutely think it stands up. I think it does have a pacing issue. I think that some of the storytelling in it is really wacky. But I appreciate that on a weird level because they were going for it.
And you know what? I appreciate too, because so many movies nowadays we talk about, not even just animated films, but they feel the need to explain everything. They didn't. It's just, it is what it was. Geppetto's in the mouth, Geppetto's in the belly of a whale. How he got there don't really matter. That's where he ended up.
Yeah. How's he surviving? You know? Why is the whale still alive?
Exactly.
He's on the bottom of the ocean.
Is like, this is almost most fairy tale ish or fable ish.
Fable's
a better word. Wherein there's no there's literally no rhyme or reason for almost anything that occurs in the film, but told as a whole as a fable. Those aren't things you have to question. We questioned them and we were joking about them during the going over, just because as a somewhat logical adult, while watching this, my brain is like, well, that's insane. That's fine. You know, that's going to happen, but it doesn't take away from my enjoyment of it.
And I know you said that this wasn't maybe as a movie for kids, but I do think, in a lot of respects, it was much more geared towards children than Snow White was, because of the fable, the message of it.
Yeah.
Of don't talk to strangers. Of the message it was really trying to send out with the naive kid. So
no, that's
from
such
that
a
aspect,
good point.
I really think it was more geared towards kids. And like you said, even if the movie itself, if you don't think the movie itself holds up, the characters that have sprung from it are probably some of the most iconic ones, you know, ever. And a huge part, like you said, of Disney's culture, you know, When You Wish Upon a Star is the song.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know.
And deservedly so.
Deservedly so.
And no one sings it as good as Cliff Edwards. Please stop using any other version in the parks. Yeah. Please. Yeah. Because any other version sounds like a cheap imitation. He just had that pitch and that little vibrato to his voice, and the just the equipment it was recorded on.
Yeah.
It has a certain warmth to the song.
Yeah.
And hearing updated versions of it usually never, ever sits well. Instrumental versions of it. I like multiple instrumental versions of it. There's a, in particular, there's a great version by Jim Brickman on piano who does it. I absolutely love that one. So does anyone have any other closing remarks before we wrap this episode up? We're almost at the 1:30 mark.
Nope, I just want to repeat what the Blue Fairy said, to be brave, truthful, and unselfish.
Mm. Well done. Yeah. Well said. Harumph. Give that woman a harumph. All right, so next week we are going to go into Fantasia. Spoiler alert. Love it. But that will be next week. And then the following week, we are set to have a special guest on the show. And we are going to talk about everything that's happening this weekend at D23. So, quote unquote, we're going to take a week off from the film stuff. And we'll be a week late, really, on the D23 reveals. But trust me when I say that the guest that we're going to have is worth the wait. And you will enjoy it very, very much. So right now you are listening to Pinocchioic by Pogo. You can find his videos over on youtube.com/Pogo, his music over at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix, and his home web address is pogomix.net, where you can listen to his brand new album, Kindred Shadow. You can also hear that on YouTube, as a matter of fact. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at lastgenpodcast, on Facebook under the same name, and join our little Facebook group at Disney Magic Hour. And then head on over to iTunes, which I want to do. Can someone please bring up iTunes? You've got it. Thank you so much. Well done for me. Where you can head on over there, hit that subscribe button, and please give us a 5-star review. We received 3 reviews just last week. I just wanted to say thank you to Silver Faja. Mm-hmm. Right? Silver Faja.
Yeah.
Great chemistry and information. The addition of the 4th member was a good idea.
Was
a good plus. All right. Friend of yours?
Yeah.
All right. Don't worry. Mouse for All says, great for the Disney newbie and the Disney experienced and everyone in between. Keep up the good work, guys. Thank you so much. And Disney Mom 34 says, informative, fun, and easy to listen to. I highly recommend. Highly recommend. So thank you so much for the kind words. Share the show as much as you feel fit. You feel fit very much. It's a weird show tonight.
It is. It had a very...
You know what, though? It's good. I feel a little more comfortable.
Yeah.
I think I was a little stiff.
Yeah.
I feel like we've been a little stiff on this show.
No, it's got more
of our...
And
that's not really us.
No, it's got more of our other vibe.
Yeah, so the insanity that happens within Pinocchio was really, really great.
It was great. It brought
out... Next week, we got Fantasia, which... Yes. So... much to talk about. I may honestly do a supplemental on the techniques and stuff going into that.
Yeah.
If I find the time next week, so we don't use up our entire hour and a half talking about that, because we could.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll just go into each sequence.
Should watch that documentary together.
Absolutely watch the documentary on the Blu-ray, because that'll be a gold mine of knowledge.
I love that.
All right, guys. Have a nice night. We will see you next week. Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Scott.
Goodnight, Scott.
Say goodnight, Bri.
Goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Pete. Say goodnight, Pogo.
Enough's enough.